This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, this is Marina Sirtis, Deanna Troi from Star Trek The Next Generation. You're listening to Trek FM.
T.L. Greyhawk.
Welcome to another cup of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to the next generation. I'm your host, Justin Ozer, and join with me today are the absolutely amazingly incredible Amy and the outstandingly, fantastically, galactically stellar Richard. Amy, how are you doing?
Woo! I was thinking you were doing an alliteration with the A's going on there. Well done,
Thank you.
Justin.
Well, I was just trying to put as many words. I didn't really think about it beforehand, but good to have you here, Amy.
Yes, and listeners, happy 4th of July. Independence Day will be tomorrow.
Yes. For our listeners in the U.S., you get an opportunity to celebrate our independence and have a long holiday. Actually, for me at my company, Wednesday and Thursday are holidays, and I'm taking Friday off, so why not just have a long weekend?
Nice, nice.
But you know what? You have a 2-month vacation, Amy,
I do.
So I can't beat that. And Richard, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I am excited for tomorrow. It's my favorite holiday of the year.
Yes.
And yes, that is beyond Christmas and Father's Day. I absolutely love the 4th of July, and well, I'll be drunk and passed out probably by tomorrow. So don't expect me to comment on the Babel conference.
There you go.
Well, but it comes out the day before, so you can make some comments that day.
Yeah.
I'm still going to be drunk and probably passed out.
We're starting early.
Yeah. I mean, because it's a 4-day affair for me.
Nice.
Or at least this year it is.
Very. Nice. Yeah, because it comes in the middle of the week. Yeah.
That's right. So I gotta get my traitorous rebellion sort of partying out of me. You know what
there
I mean?
You go. There you go. That's funny.
So this is actually the first time in a couple of episodes that all three of us are here together. So, yes.
Good to be back. So. Good to have our Earl Grey.
Yeah. So we will get to the main topic of the episode in a bit, but we just had some listener feedback that we wanted to read. So we got an iTunes review recently, and it is from user RC-974.
Is that supposed to be like a droid number or something like that?
Maybe. It's not a Star Trek reference.
No.
Probably not.
So they, on their review, they had a subject of geeking out in 10 forward, and they said, "This show gives you a sense of being on the Enterprise D, bringing back memories of the series in a vivid way, analyzing aspects of those memories we may not have pondered before. The absolute adoration the hosts have for the show, as well as the desire to share their enthusiasm with the audience, makes this a most enjoyable broadcast. This is a must-listen for TNG fans." Well, and they gave a 5-star review, of course. So, as you can tell from the description, well, thank you so much, whoever you are. We don't know you by that name. but thank you so much. So glad that you're enjoying the show. And we always appreciate it when listeners give us a review in the iTunes store, whatever feedback that they want to give. We will take that into account, read it on the show. So thank you so much for that.
Well, thank you so much. It was a wonderful iTunes review. And listeners, if you feel inclined, please do so. It helps others to find our show and, you know, gives them an idea of what other listeners are thinking about our show. And it was wonderful to get. So thank you so much, RC-974.
Well, we also had some listener feedback in the Babel Conference, this time on episode 232, which was the suspicions commentary, where we had on guest Patrick Devlin and Richard. Patrick and I did a commentary of the sixth season episode Suspicions. So, Amy, did you want to read the first comment?
Yes. And thank you to Patrick for filling in for me. He did a fine job bringing up Troy. So he did well in my book. Matthew Bell says, that was a really fun commentary. I genuinely coughed at the body bag remark. Yeah, that was good. Regarding the Ferengi funeral customs, I wonder if the slicing of the corpse into portions for vacuum sealing into Tupperware has to be done by a specific individual. Otherwise, the value of the pieces is affected. However, does a 24th century autopsy really require physically cutting into the body? This is era of high-resolution scans and non-invasive surgical procedures. Are autopsies the last bastion of knives in the medical profession? And having said all that, shouldn't Bev still lose her job? Solving the mystery doesn't change the fact that she did the autopsy. Great points, Matthew.
Lots of good points. Well, Matthew, you're making a reference there to what we find out in Deep Space Nine about the Ferengi funeral customs, where they vacuum seal remains and sell them to the highest bidder. So this was before they had, I think, even thought of... I'm trying to remember, though, because this is while season one of Deep Space Nine is going on, but I'm not sure if they had established that.
No, I think that's in season two.
It's in season two, yeah.
Because I think I just watched when they revealed that.
Okay, so... But the way that I think about it also is, this guy's a Ferengi scientist. He's not making profit. You know, it seems like he killed himself. So maybe he's not eligible for their usual funeral customs, and they just want the body back without an autopsy or whatever. But it's a good question of how they do the autopsy, because I think in the episode it's like, I'm going to do the autopsy. And then it's like, I did the autopsy.
Yeah.
they don't really show you how it's done. So, and yeah, she basically disobeyed an order, but I think... Patrick Devlin in the comments was pointing out, yeah, in Star Trek, you know, unless you're, say, Michael Burnham in Discovery, there usually aren't consequences to stuff that you do. So, yeah. What do you think about all that, Richard?
I was just thinking of a little bit morbid way of how they cut up the body, but anyway, it's like, I was just thinking like an old meat shop or something like that. I was like, oh damn,
was the end up like sliced bread?
Yeah, like how they use. I mean, because he was like talking about using knives and everything, and like, and I was thinking of the episode "Message in a Bottle" from Voyager, where they're talking about emergency hologram doctor talks about we don't use knives or leeches or anything like that. This is the 24th century how we do things. And yeah, just mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
But thanks for the comment. I'm surprised you didn't talk about the carpet.
Well, you know, I think we cover the carpet pretty thoroughly in the episode. But I wonder how many listeners went back and looked at to see the carpeting.
What did we say about the body bag? I can't remember what we said.
Well, I think it was that Patrick was saying, like, when Jabril comes out on this slab, that there's this thing that kind of looks like half of a trash can, and then it just kind of retracts, so it doesn't seem like it has any purpose. I think that's maybe what he meant.
Right. Okay, now I remember. Okay, I was like, yeah. I can't remember what we said about body bags, but okay, all right. Well, there you go. 24th century version of body bags. They don't seal.
Apparently not.
Zach Moore said, fun discussion, but at the end when you were listing Beverly episodes, you didn't remember the best one. Remember me.
Yeah, Zach, I thought about that afterwards. Like, we listed these different episodes, but we didn't list Remember Me, which is a fantastic Beverly episode. So,
one
sorry.
Of the
In
best.
The moment, we forgot. I know, but, you know, things are flying by on the... I'm not going to make an excuse. We forgot. We didn't remember. Remember me. Well, on today's episode, so we're going to continue our ongoing series of favorite character moments. So this time, it's season 6, which we think is a fantastic season. And I think there's a lot of possibilities here, and we'll see what we come up with. So... Amy, do you want to give us your first pick?
I do. And this was hard. And I think I say this every season. But man, looking at the list of these episodes, and I was usually when we do these, I try to pick out episodes or character moments that aren't so well known, just, you know, to give our listeners just, you know, a different perspective. But man, this season, I went for my favorites. I was like, I'm going to indulge. And so hopefully they won't be on your picks. We shall see if there's any duplicates. So I'm very excited for this one. So my number one character moment. Well, my favorite character, I know, is Major Rakaal. And she is face of the enemy, Deanna Troi, who is the Cardassian Major Rakaal.
Romulan.
Oh my gosh. See, I'm in my DS9 rewatch. That's the problem.
You're seeing lots of Cardassians.
I was just about to say, they don't look alike.
No, they don't. Sorry, no. She did not have the spoon forehead. So, she is Romulan, and boy, does she act the crap out of this episode. And I know it's not about the episode. So my favorite moment from Deanna Troi / Major Rakaal is when she's talking to Novek, and the plan has gone wrong because the carrier, the transport ship, they blew that up, and so they didn't know how to get these the three Romulans into Federation space, and they were just running out of plans. And so she says to Novek in just the best, sternest possible voice, and she's like channeling, you know, this Romulan, what's the name of it? Tal Shiar?
Tal Shiar.
Yeah. She's channeling this Tal Shiar attitude, and she's like, yes, you will. We're not doing it your way anymore, Novek. And they sort of go back and forth, and just, now you are going to listen to me. I'll have you ejected into space. Is that clear, Commander? She is so awesome and is taking control. She's using all of her skills, not only as a counselor, but as a commanding officer, channeling this Tal Shiar. Like, it is, by hands down, just my favorite character moment of season 6. I love it. I love it. Deanna Troi is so awesome.
I mean, that's a fantastic episode. It's quite possibly my favorite Troi episode of anything in the 7 seasons, because you do see her in this different role and she's trying to balance things. It's like, okay,
yes,
I'm a Federation officer, I'm a counselor, I'm empathic, but at the same time, I'm in this situation where if I don't act this role, I could get myself and a lot of other people killed and not have these Romulan defectors come over, which could be really important for the future of the Federation. So she's trying to balance this and she's playing along, but she gets to that point where it's like, and I love that scene as well. It's like, now is the time to listen to me. We've tried to do it your way. It hasn't worked. I'm ordering you to do that, or I'll eject you into space. And we know how Troi is. Like, she's the last person you'd think who would, like, eject someone into space.
Yes, or even threaten that.
But because she's gotten to this point and is in this perilous situation, I believe that she might actually do it, you know? If she's not happy with this guy, because that's the role that she has to play. So, yeah, fantastic pick from a really, really great episode. One of my favorites.
Richard, was it too obvious I was going to go there?
I wasn't even going to pick it, to be quite honest. It was on my honorable mentions. But, uh-huh. I mean, I was like, yeah, I kind of figured you were going to choose that anyway. But I agree with you. It's a really good episode. Kind of wish that we would have saw this a lot sooner for her in the earlier seasons, but
more undercover Troi.
No, that's not what I mean. I mean, like, just
her taking just command. Being,
well, not even command. It just doesn't fit. What I mean, something like this, you would probably never see in the first 3 seasons, for her. Just that being that assertive, officer that, you know, I guess we assume that she is, especially beyond the Enterprise. But like I said, you know, finally we have writers that actually are willing to do that, and it shows obviously in this episode, because I mean she's a standalone for most of it,
right?
And especially with another woman that basically mirrors her and confronts her. So I mean, yay to the writers, but sad that it happened so late.
Yeah, and that's another good point, because she gets to play off of this female Romulan commander of this vessel, and just like their interaction and things, it's wonderful. It's something you probably don't see enough in TNG. Yeah, and like what I think about with her training is she's had a lot of the same training that the other Starfleet officers have, but she doesn't get it tested as much like she does in this situation. This is probably one of her greatest tests, and that brings that out, which is awesome.
You know, it's nothing. It's not her fault either. I mean, I'm sure that in the beginning of the seasons that they had a hard time to fit her in anyway,
right.
Only because, I hate to say it, she's just a counselor. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, really, what does a counselor do on the front line? You know what I mean?
Council yeah. Captain Picard, apparently.
But you know what I mean. I'm saying, like, it's just, you're not doing what everyone else is doing, is what I'm saying. And
yeah.
All you're doing is just, you're staying on the ship doing nothing, except for when they all come back, you get to hear about it and talk to them about it and whatever trauma or whatever, you know, whatever a counselor would do, you know.
It's true. And a lot of times, especially early on when she is off the ship, it's part of like a love story.
So right. Exactly.
It's a different kind of thing.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
I think she didn't have the opportunity to test her command skills and training until now. So yeah. Okay. So that's my number one.
Excellent. Excellent choice. Not disappointing us by having a Troy moment, but a very strong one, of course. Richard, what's your first pick?
Well, I'm going to go with my own favorite, too. It's going to be Worf, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Worf, of course. And I chose Rifle Air. And it's that moment when he's... I'm assuming he's been there a couple of days or whatever. And he's
at the monastery?
Yeah, at the monastery, praying or whatever mm-hmm. they want to call it. And he just... Kalis just all of a sudden just appears.
Yeah.
I love that moment because you could see it in his face that it's like, is this real or mm-hmm. am I hallucinating? So,
yeah.
And because they go through a fast or something like that while they're doing
yes.
it as well. So,
yeah.
I can only imagine the thoughts are going in his head or lack thereof because he's so, you know, exhausted from and not even thinking straight. So, and then of course the entire episode is great too, because I absolutely love the whole Klingon lore and learning about the history and whatnot, because I'm a huge fan of when it comes to traditions and previous histories for a lot of cultures. So, but yeah, I absolutely love that episode.
Yeah, and that is a great moment because you know Worf and how dedicated he is to his culture. And you're right, that moment when Kalis appears, he's like, yeah, is this real? But then like his logic, you know, and his Starfleet training, it's like there has to be a reason, an explanation, but my faith believes it, you know, and so you see that, and it is a great moment. Good pick, and I sort of suspected you would have chosen
yeah.
that.
It's a really great moment, and I thought of choosing something from Rightful Heir, but maybe I steered away because I thought you might do it. But you know what I really like about that episode as well is that you get to see Worf not just in like one mindset or one way, but you get to see his progression over the course of it. Like he's doubting and wondering what's going on. Kalis appears and he's like, oh, is this it? And then he really firmly believes it. Then he kind of is skeptical and believes it again. But then when they find out that this is really a clone, he makes the really smart decision like, well, yes, but it doesn't matter because he's been cloned from that important figure. He has the important teachings. Let's go with it. So this is Worf kind of going through, you know, all of these different doubts and ways of thinking about it, which I think you don't see enough him just kind of like trying to work through things that way. And at the end of it, he's able to convince Gowron to accept it and the monks at Borth to accept it, and makes, you know, this thing that that's going to have a big impact in the Empire. So yeah, I just love the way that you see his character and that whole episode. And that's a really great moment that you chose, Richard, where he actually appears. Because I think the first time I saw TNG, I was like, ah, oh, where's this going? What's going on? And I was like, oh, it's Kalis. What? You know, I didn't quite expect them to do that. I thought it would be more about him going through the journey and not finding what he was looking for. Mm. So
good pick, Richard.
Thanks.
One Troy, one Worf. Remember, Amy, we've got to have a math moment.
Oh, I've got it.
You've got it. Okay.
So, Justin, what's your pick and how did you decide to go about it this time?
Yeah, you know, oftentimes we want to point up things that aren't thought about as much or episodes that don't get talked about as much. But as I thought about it more and more, I was like, I can't possibly pass up one of the most impactful and important episodes probably in the whole series and in a lot of Star Trek, and that's Chain of Command Part 2, which is the episode where Picard basically gets tortured by Golma Dredd. I mean, first of all, it's a fantastic episode, but I didn't actually pick something during any of those torture scenes. We've talked about some of that. We talked about on the Fathers of TNG, Golma Dredd showing his daughter in and all of that interaction. But I didn't pick that. One of the things that I picked, which I think is a really fascinating moment, is Picard's gone through this whole experience, right? And the way you've seen it from your perspective is Golma Dredd's trying to torture him, get him to believe, you know, that there are four lights and all of that, right? I'm sorry, get him to believe there are five lights. Right. I always get confused. Yeah. Get him to believe there are five lights instead of four. And, you know, you see Picard going through this, and it seems like when you're watching it, like, all right, he's totally resisting, he's stronger and all of that. But then at the end, there is this scene with Troy where Picard says, and I'll just quote the whole thing here because I think it's really important. So Picard says, "At the end, he gave me a choice between a life of comfort or more torture. All I had to do was to say that I could see five lights when in fact there were only four." And Troy says, "You didn't say it." Picard says, "No, no, but I was going to. I would have told him anything, anything at all. But more than that, I believed that I could see five lights." So that tells me a couple of things. And it kind of spins, like when I first saw it, it spins that part of that episode in a different way, because he has gone through such horrific torture that he's actually saying, like, I would have told him anything at all for that to stop. And for a little bit, I actually believed it myself. So it's really gotten to him on that level. But despite that, he still says, he still won't give Madrid the satisfaction. He still says there are four lights. So it's like it makes you appreciate kind of his fortitude and his resolve in this situation all that much more, because there's this big part of him that is actually even believing it and wants things to stop, but he's overcome that. And you see him as you see him in that scene where he says there are four lights. So I just love that part at the end, because they didn't have to do that. They didn't have to kind of spin it in that different way, but it adds this other complexity and this other layer that makes you even more impressed with who Picard is.
Yeah, that you're right. At that very end where he's believes and seeing those five lights, that just spins the whole episode. And you're right.
And I wonder if Troy is the only one that he told that, because I don't know if that would come up in a report or he would tell anyone else that.
But no, that seems definitely a counselor patient, you know.
And it tells you that he really trusts her to be able to tell her that, because that's a very like vulnerable thing to say. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it may have seemed, but he did get through to me and I had to really resist even harder. So. Mm-hmm.
That was a great moment. Oh, so good.
Yeah, I think and I think that ends the episode. So that's a fantastic way to kind of wrap up that episode. But what do you think about that, Richard?
I have nothing on it really, except I mean it's nothing good, but but like I mean I could have done without knowing that. He was willing to break in. Yeah, I understand that probably the whole point of that of that confession is to show the trust between Troy and him, but at the same time,
it's also to show what can happen, because I think part of the crux of the episode is to point up what can happen to a person under torture, and I think it adds a different layer to that it's maybe even more
because it's kind not
of destructive.
It's not just the physical; it's that psychological torture.
I'd believe that if they would actually show that throughout from there on out. I don't believe it because they don't. I mean, I do believe it. I do know what torture does to someone. That would, I mean, like I said, you know, continuity. that's the biggest issue with Star Trek altogether.
Hey, don't knock down my moment because
I'm not trying to knock it down. I'm just saying. But yes, they
should have followed up on that, and there should have been some recurrence for him or something.
That's why I say it's more about Troy and Picard than anything else. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with Picard's character or anything like that, or at least that last scene it is. I mean, the rest of it is, but like, I mean, it just shows me that, I mean, he's vulnerable just like the rest of us, but at the same time, it's just like with Janeway going through depression through the void. We see her get through it for what, one episode, and then we never see it again.
With that more episodic era, that can be an issue that they don't follow up on it, because you would think the experience that Picard goes through that he would need to go through some kind of like therapy or something for quite a while, be taken off duty for a while, because that's quite an intense experience. He might have nightmares or issues that come up after that, but you never really hear about it again.
Yeah,
it's true.
And that's not to say that it's not happening, you know, because you're not going to see a TV episode, you know, about the boring stuff, even though that's the realistic stuff.
We saw in Family. I mean, really him getting
over it.
Yeah,
there was a follow-up there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, that's something that's just as, I mean, being a POW in a sense, and, you know, mm-hmm. torture is just as bad. I mean, or if that worse, I mean, depending on what they do, of course.
Yeah.
I can only imagine the kind of trauma. It's probably more traumatic when being tortured, obviously. I mean, I don't know what kind of torture he went through with the Borg. It didn't show it, but I mean, at the same time, regardless, great. It's a great pick, regardless of what, of my feelings towards it, towards the episode.
Well, and when you were talking about, you know, how that showing Picard's, you know, fortitude and staying, resisting, it sort of reminds me a little bit, like, you know, because he admits to almost, you know, seeing these five lights, and in First Contact with Data and the Borg Queen, and, you know, at the very end, Picard's like, would you really have gone with the Borg Queen? You know, and he says, well, I thought about it for 0.68 of a second, and for an android, right, that's an eternity, you know? So again, there's that similarity that it's like, okay, I'm resisting, but yet there's the smallest tinge of hint that, yeah, everyone's vulnerable. They're going to have a breaking point.
Well, and it all comes down to the point that also that, you know, it's part of the reason why torture is not a reliable way to extract information from someone. It really isn't, because like in the episode, he was willing to save five lights. Well, I mean, if we're talking about just humans, I mean, your mind is willing to, it's a coping mechanism that you're willing to fabricate whatever you're trying, you know, to get out of that situation,
you know, just to make
it's
stop.
About survival. Yeah, exactly.
Although I think in Madred's case, the reason that he is wanting Picard to say there are five lights is to have the acknowledgement that Picard is broken and will do anything that Madred wants him to do.
Oh, no, absolutely. I was just talking about the last piece when he was talking to Picard. Yeah,
when he's talking to Troy and says, I would have said anything. And that is the big problem with torture, because it can get to the point where someone is willing to say anything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And oftentimes it might not be true because they just want it to stop in that moment.
Exactly.
Good pick, Justin.
Thank you. And I mean, it's a good point, Richard. Thought about. No, I mean, it really
to,
is.
Not trying to knock you down either.
No, but
I mean,
you're right.
It's just my reservations about that episode.
As great an episode as it is, if there would have been a follow-up, it would have elevated it probably.
Oh, absolutely.
More.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, Amy, your second pick.
Okay. So this one might be a little controversial, but I'm trying.
Wesley Crusher is not in this season.
I was going to say, it's like, yeah, there's nothing controversial this season.
Because I think this episode is not, well, there, I think I hear a lot of people complaining about the episode and how it came out, and that's Relics, but I wanted to find the good in it. And we see, Geordi not behaving very nicely to Captain Scotty, as he keeps insisting. I think it's funny. They always keep calling him Captain Scott. He's like, he's telling you, call him Scotty, but whatever. So, you know, Geordi's not behaving very well towards our lovely icon, Scotty, there. And then Picard sort of rebuffs him and says, you know, he needs to feel useful. So it's not an order, but, you know, make him, help him to feel useful. And what I love about this and what I think it shows in Geordi's character is, you know, he was right. He had to do what the captain said within an hour. He was on a time. He had to do his job. He didn't have time to, you know, show engineering around to Scotty. But so even though he was in the right, he didn't have the right to treat him so hostily, I think. So he gets rebuffed from Picard. And I think it just shows his character that after that, he could have very childishly, oh, why? Fine. I have to do this and, you know, taking that attitude. But he actually learns and develops a good friendship with Scotty, and, you know, and is when they're on the ship, on Scotty's old ship, you know, and they're going through, oh, these things are a relic and blah, blah, blah. And Geordi's like, well, just because something is old doesn't mean you throw it away. And like has that realization of, you know, the old things and how we, you know, can learn from them and how we use them and how we grow from them. And I just think it shows his character of, you know, accepting this and turning his attitude and perspective to end up where they actually are friends by the end of the episode. And I think that's huge and says a lot about Geordi's character.
Yeah. And I mean, I think there's actually a parallel with Barclay, because I think in Hollow Pursuits, you know, Geordi, I think, is talking to Picard and he's like, oh, this guy, Barclay, like what can I do? Nobody wants him. And it's like, wait, just see if you can spend some time with him. And, you know, and I think later on they become a lot more friendlier. They work better together. So mm-hmm. It almost seems like when Geordi is first like encountering someone, maybe he had seen Barclay before, but like in the case of Scotty, it's like he's encountering someone who's kind of an annoyance to him. And Geordi doesn't care if he's like a legend, he's been lost for a long time and all mm-hmm. that. He's just like, stay away because I need to do my work. But he's willing to adjust to that. And you're right. By the end, they're working together to get out of the Dyson Sphere. And I think it's great. I know this episode does get kind of some criticism, but I've always enjoyed it. I like that we got Scotty on TNG, and I think overall it's an enjoyable episode. But you know, I can understand. So what are the criticisms you've heard about it?
Well, that Geordi's mean to Scotty, so that's the first one. Uh-huh. That Scotty is, you know, just in his liquor and reminiscing, and that doesn't really shed him in the best of light. Mm. You know, and so
it's, see that.
Yeah, so that those are excuse me, the two largest concerns that people that I've heard have with this episode.
Okay.
So I actually like this episode quite a bit, and it's not because of, you know, I mean, the criticism that most people, I mean, this is a perfect example of what's going on today when it comes to workforces, changing hands of workforces. And the reason why I say that is that, so obviously Geordi being the new age and then Scotty being the old age, it's just, and I'm experiencing it now, funny enough, and I'm only 35.
You're not 101.
I know, I'm not 100 yeah, and some odd years.
And think about this, the difference in time period between, you know, Scotty coming forward 75 years, it's like if someone came from 1943 and was trying to like do your job, Richard, like it would be impossible. There's so much that's happened, right?
Right.
And it's probably the same kind of thing with Scotty, but you're probably experiencing it on a much smaller time scale than that because things are moving so quickly.
Well, yeah, exactly. And you know, when you're dealing with people coming into, like, I mean, it's not just me. It's, I mean, my brother, funny enough, my brother's seen it and he's an engineer, but like, it's like, You get these new people and it's great. The enthusiasm's great. The confidence is great and all that kind of stuff. I want to get this done. I want to get that done. I want to please the boss and all that kind of stuff, which is great. All great things, really is. But when you ignore the experience and then on top of that, disrespect the experience And basically, you know, like as we saw that, you know, obviously Scotty hasn't gone completely useless because Jordy needed the expertise on that shuttlecraft. But like at the same time, it's a great example of changing a and it's not just this generation or last generation. It's any generation really. Mm-hmm. When you're changing workforces, especially when you're coming when it comes to like how everyone does things differently, which is fine and everything. But like at the same time, it's a great lesson to be learned that you need to respect I don't want to say elder because I'm not an elder.
Respect the more experienced.
There
maybe.
You go. Mm-hmm. There you go. Respect your more experienced people. Your seniors. No, mm-hmm. I don't like that either.
No. Yes, more experienced.
More experience. There you go. I mean, and it's any industry really, especially when you're doing production. No. I mean, really, that's ultimately what it boils down to is production. If you're doing anything, I think it could be transformed to any industry, but like I mean, it's just a great lesson to learn that not everything is old you throw away, and I understand that you know I understand that drinking him drinking and you know doesn't shed the best light, but at the same time, I mean, really, if we're talking about like the 60s and something like that, didn't everyone drink back then?
Well, there were times in TOS where like a plot point would revolve around Scotty's drinking. So mm-hmm. It's not like it was just introduced on TNG.
Yeah, but exactly.
It's more emphasized because it's the one episode.
Shoot, I'd be drinking too if I was like, if I felt
lost for 75 years.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Like, well, I think you're right that, yeah, Geordi, through this episode, his character arc, you know, is exactly saying what you are pointing out, Richard, that we all need to, and that we see that Geordi does, you know, respect the experience and, you know, use it. And yeah, I think Geordi, his character arc in this is really good.
Yeah. And I like that he recognizes that and that, you know, being a mentor and, you know, I don't know if he's same generation as Scotty. No, probably not. No, Picard's not really. He's old, but not
Picard,
that old.
Picard wasn't even alive when Scotty got
right.
lost. Not so, lost, but it got stored in the transporter. Yeah.
But at the same time, he teaches him to respect it and to you know get to know him, sort of thing. And mm-hmm. I really like that being as a mentor or his captain, and at the same time, he can be his mentor because obviously yes. you know. So I really like that. Yeah.
Excellent.
See, there's good a choice, good positive spin.
yes.
Richard, your second pick.
So I'm going to go a little bit goofy here. You guys can definitely listen to the interview for Morgan Gendel. So obviously, if you hear that name, you know what episode I'm going to be talking about. But Earl Grey 167, I interviewed Morgan Gendel, and we talked about Starship Mine.
I knew it. Yeah. I was like, oh, am I going to pick this? No, Richard will get it.
Well, and you know... I love that. I really love this episode when it deals with Picard, but that's not the reason why I chose it. Because we're talking about favorite character moments.
Yes,
so
I'm interested.
I love Data mimicking Hutch's behavior. Oh, it is freaking hilarious, and it's like, and I'm sure he had a blast doing that. And I absolutely love that he's like copying him and. You know, basically mimicking his behavior, and Hutch doesn't seem to notice it. He's
oh,
like,
I know.
Oh,
that's
well,
what's
yeah.
funny about it. Yeah.
So it's just those two going on. I'm sure they had a blast, and it was just I could only imagine the how many outtakes it took to get that right. But like, I absolutely love it. It's a funny. I mean, obviously seeing you know Picard being a badass, and then of course you know Data being the funny part of the episode. It's a great balance of the two. So I absolutely love it.
Yeah, that is good. And again, just showing Data continually trying to understand this human experience. You know, and when they're going at it back and forth, call me Hutch Hutchinson, and it's just. And they do the small talk forever. And you're like, really, this has got to stop. And it just keeps going on. And just how quick Data picks up and mimics him so perfectly. It's great. Good pick. I love it.
Yeah. And of course, when we think of Starship Mine, we think Die Hard on the Enterprise. Picard just like running around, like setting traps, shooting arrows, stuff like that. But there is that really funny scene. And like this, yeah, the small talk that Data has is hilarious, because like I wanted to pull some of it out of here, because it's just so funny, like the things they talk about that like are so boring and don't mean anything.
Absolutely. The weather, I think they talk about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they talk about color choice. Like, Data says, "The pleasure is mine, Hutch. I have a meaning to compliment you on your choice of colors here." "Oh, you really think so? It wasn't easy making a final decision, let me tell you. I can well imagine. The light in this room would make color selection exceptionally problematic." Yeah. Precisely. I mean, they just go on and on like that, and it's hilarious.
It's like us talking about carpet on the walls.
Yeah, yeah. "Have you noticed the aesthetic effects of carpeting on the ceiling of Shuttlecraft?"
Well, and it's funny because before, when Data actually gets to Hutch, like he's going around to everyone on the crew, you know, practicing his small talk. And then who is it that's like, "You need to meet, you know, Hutch"? Who was that?
I think it was Beverly, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was talking to Beverly.
Yeah.
She's like, "Oh, Data, let me introduce you." And then, yeah, rest is history. It's awesome.
Yeah, and I think I've said it before, I love those TNG episodes where they start out with something funny before they get into the serious action to just kind of break things up, so it's not like serious all the way through.
It's a good mix. You're right. Good balance.
Excellent pick, Richard. Keeping things a little late.
Thanks. Love it.
So my second pick, okay, can you guys guess what my second pick would be?
Yes.
What do you think?
Let me roll out my piano.
Yeah, Richard got it. Time Zero Part 2.
Oh! Yes.
My first time on Earl Grey, I think we talked about Time Zero and how much I love it. But Time Zero Part 2, the part that I wanted to highlight, I mean, there's a lot of fun and I love Mark Twain and all that stuff, but like my favorite moment of that is when you see Guinan and Picard and they're in the cave in the 19th century when I think everyone's gone back over to the 24th century. And you see them like interacting together, and you know, they have this special relationship we found out before, and it's weird because it's like it's the first time they're meeting, but they've really met 500 years in the future. It's like the first time from Guinan's perspective, but not the first time from Picard's. And I just love some of like the dialogue that they have here. Yeah, because Guinan's wondering, like, "Why did you stay here?" And Picard says, "You were hurt. I had to make sure you were all right. And so you stayed for that? I didn't want anything to happen to you. You're far too important to me. You know an awful lot about me. Believe me, in the future, the tables will be turned. So we become friends. It goes far beyond friendship." And I just love that. I mean, we only find out a little bit of it in The Next Generation, really, but that they have this really kind of special and unusual friendship, and that, you know, Guinan has this interaction. She's next going to see Picard like 500 years after that. I mean, I think it hints at a lot more, but I just love that, and that it just kind of crosses these time barriers and all of that. I don't know. It's hard for me to put it in words, but I think their relationship is really special. And I love that, like, in that moment, you find out from something in the past, like, why their relationship is so important in the future. So I had to pick that.
Agreed. And so we always have seen Guinan and Picard and their special relationship and how much he trusts her and how much she trusts him. And so it sort of answers that question, like, well, why is she so important to Picard? Why is she so willing to help him and to be on the ship and to go with him and, you know, stick up for him and tell him when? And so then when it sort of answers that question, because when they go back in time, so then his caring towards Guinan in the cave is now what she's carrying forward. And we get to see why their history is so rich together. You know, it's a great loop.
Yeah, and he's risked his life to be there, because there would be a possibility that, at least from her perspective, that he won't get back. So I like it a lot.
Yeah.
Thoughts, Richard?
No, I like the episode. I mean, it's a great moment between the two. I mean, I kind of want there to be more to the relationship, or at least us to find out mm-hmm. more. But I mean, we get what we get, you know what I mean?
Richard. Yeah. You want more follow-ups and more continuity.
I do.
We can't go back in time and change that. Or can we?
Yeah. I don't know. But no, I mean, it's a great moment. It really is. It does. It definitely signifies on how important Guinan Guinan is for Picard. And he may not know that, and she knows that more than anyone else. But I mean, after this point, now she knows, now he knows. And then it's a far better relationship after that. So for sure, a great pick. Yeah.
Thank you. All right. So Amy, your third pick.
Okay. Oh, this one again, just one of my favorites. So this character is Lieutenant Will Riker from Second Chances. What I'm choosing this character moment sort of lasts a little bit more than a moment. But when Thomas Riker is sending Deanna on the scavenger hunt, and then their conversation in 10 Forward, like what I love about that is, even though it's Tom Riker, but that's really, we're getting this character development of Will Riker 8 years ago, and like how they are both describing looking up into the stars, and if they think strong enough that, you know, the other might feel, you know, their love, and that they're thinking about each other. And I just think that that really builds the Riker and Troy relationship far beyond what we've seen anything before. And so even though it's Thomas Riker, it really is a reflection of Will Riker 8 years ago, and how that builds their relationship. So I'm a little romantic here.
No, I like that a lot, but I have a question. Like, is it a true reflection of the way Will Riker was 8 years before, or is it a reflection of Will Riker 8 years before plus all of this isolation that he's had?
Yeah, exactly.
Plus the isolation, yeah, for sure. And so that's why, you know, when Will is saying you need to be careful, you know, because he's me and I chose my career and I don't want to see you hurt. But Thomas now has that 8 years of isolation where I think he would never betray Troy like that or choose his career over Troy because of that isolation. Because, yeah, they are definitely two different people now.
Yeah. But it's true. You do get an insight into what that Will Riker would have been before we see him mm-hmm. in season one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and their relationship together. So.
Mm-hmm. All right, Richard.
I like that. Yeah, I mean, it definitely. I don't know. I don't know if that's a feeling or if the feelings can translate across planets. I don't know. But like, yeah, no, I definitely see it. I definitely see it. I can see that he's still pining for her, and she feels the love, and she thinks it's coming from William Riker, but it's really probably not.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that. It's sort of like that star-crossed lovers sort of thing or theory or whatever you want to call it. I don't know what it's called. Yeah, I like that.
Galaxy crossed, maybe?
Yeah.
It's not across galaxies, but...
Sector? Sector
quadrant. Quadrant crossing.
And
quadrant.
I just love the little scavenger hunt that he sends her through, but... That's so cute. Anyways, I could go on and on.
That's enough mushiness. Everyone say it together.
Aww.
Okay, so Richard, I don't know if your third pick will be mushy. I kind of doubt it, but what would it be?
Well, I'm sorry to disappoint. No, just kidding. So I'm just going to choose one of my favorite episodes out of this entire season, and that would be Tapestry. Mm-hmm. Absolutely love Tapestry. It's definitely one of those episodes where, you know, you think about your choices and all that kind of stuff. And obviously it's the final moments of the episode where he's talking to Riker about, you know, what happened. And honestly, to me, you know, Riker asked, you know, whether or not it was a game or if there was a lesson to be learned, and I really think it's a really good lesson and something that Q did for him that you know, that anyone can really relate to. I mean, especially a problem that, you know, or maybe you went through something that was a close call and it changed everything in your life. Mm-hmm. You know, we hear it all the time in the news or from other people about fighting God or, you know, other things. You know, they do humanitarian projects and everything, and that's what they do for the rest of their life, sort of thing. Right. And it's
oh, you said finding. For a second, I thought you said fighting God.
No. Yeah. Finding God. Sorry.
I was like, what?
Well, it's very reassuring that, you know, that something like that well, obviously we don't officially know, but like something like that happens in the 24th century, or at least the thought of doing something like that is still there, and or at least in the future, that we can, you know, ultimately reflect and do. I mean, I hope he does better things, but it definitely reevaluates in your priorities. And really, I keep saying it every time, but like, I really wish that, you know, he would get his priorities straight on his whole family and all that kind of stuff. But, you know.
So, Richard, I have a question for you, because like Tapestry, I think it's an excellent episode, but the more that I've seen it, there's something about it that I question a bit, because one of the messages that I see out of it, and I could be like way off and I could just be alone in this, but one of the messages that it seems is, in order to get where you need to go, or, you know, to be captain instead of, I guess, in the alternate timeline where some of this stuff doesn't happen, he's just like a science lieutenant or something mm-hmm. for a long time. But it seems like the defining thing in his life is actually going through with this fight and being stabbed in the heart. To me, it almost seems like the message is that sometimes you have to
take the
fighting. Well, take a risk, I agree. But if I look at it specifically, it's like him being part of this fight like changed his whole career, and that it's putting like a certain like positive spin
on absolutely. That. No, I agree with that. What I mean by the whole looking back, it's not just, it's like, you know, I'll take my own life, for example. You know, she's upstairs too. Eva, my daughter, there are some times where I get frustrated and I get really, you know, bogged down, you know, because she has a lot more energy than I do. Of course, yeah. You know, so what child
kids.
Doesn't?
Kids.
Exactly.
Kids. Yeah.
But like, there are days where it's like, I think, you know, what would it be like if I didn't have her, you know? And it's not obviously not the same as being impaled in a heart. I've got more, more traumatic events that have happened to me, but I'm saying that the most significant out of everything that I've done since her birth, I do not regret, because if I did, or anything before that, if I did, or even after that, but like, anyway, regardless, you know, if it didn't happen, I wouldn't have my little girl mm-hmm. that I absolutely love and that I cherish with everything that I have. And then of course, you know, but of course, my wife happened as well too. Can't not mention her because she'll kill me. but it's just like, you know, I agree. You know, you have to take risk in order to advance in your career, and it's the same thing with most careers, especially if there's lots of competition or lack thereof, and you have to basically cut through competition, or, you know, undercut competition by being better. But like, it's the same idea, and I see that same lesson. I'm just saying that the whole episode to me is not to regret your choices and to and be the person that you are, that you've already made, and basically make changes and adapt the best the way you can. And as we found out with Picard, you know, after that, even though he had a fake heart, he still became the man that the great man that he is, captaining the flagship of the Enterprise. Whereas, really, would he have done that if he had a real heart, you know, sort of thing? And I agree with that. And, you know, it's just, yeah, it's about life choices.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I could see that. I just try to like wrap my head around it. And I guess the way I can think about it is that the choices in your life have all led up to, you know, this moment that you're experiencing now. And some of those things at the time, it might have seemed like that was a really bad idea, mm-hmm. but it took you in a direction that was more positive. Like, I think the sense that we get from the episode was that actually Picard was kind of rowdy and not disciplined and was...
He's my kind of guy.
but you get the sense that it's in a certain way that something dramatic needed to happen, like this fight with the Nausicaans and him being impaled in the heart, for him to reassess and then be able to eventually be on a trajectory, you know, to become a captain in Starfleet. Maybe that's the message of the of the episode. Like sometimes you need those things that seem at the time to be the worst that could happen. Like I just got stabbed through the heart. That's terrible. Right. But maybe it's those things that help you to reassess where you've been and to get to a better place. So
right. And it can be any for anyone too, to make a positive change in your own life. I mean, maybe something like going to jail or something like that, you know, that be like, oh no, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life sort of thing. And that changes everything. Or I almost fell off a damn cliff because I was being stupid and reckless, or I was drunk or something like that. You know, that could also be something as well. It's just like with anyone else. I mean, especially when they're all doing bad things, that, you know, it takes one thing that'll kick you in the rear and then make you go that positive direction. So
yeah, I think that's a really good point, Richard, that you're saying, like, yeah, end up in jail and, you know, then you change your life and, you know, you live out. And so say 20 years later, it's like, man, that was a really stupid thing. You know, it was a negative thing, breaking the law, getting caught, going to jail type of thing. So if you would have gone back and not gone to jail, like, how would your life have been different? You know, maybe mm-hmm. going to jail was the thing that you needed so that you could implement change, recognize that you didn't want to go down this path type of thing. So yeah, the fact of going to jail is not a good thing. The fact that Captain Picard gets in a fight with this Nausicaan is not a good thing, but yet the result and how he changes it and how that changes his life. So where he is now, I think that's a really good character moment.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, Richard and Amy. You've addressed my question and small objection to the episode. I'm going to enjoy it more the next time.
Sweet.
Okay, so my third choice. I was thinking about this and maybe shuffling things a bit between my third choice and what I thought would be an honorable mention. Because when you talked about second chances, Amy, I'm going to elevate this to my number three. It's also from Second Chances, but a different moment.
Okay.
Because I think it complements that. Because, you know, you were talking about learning about Will Riker through Thomas Riker as he is kind of manifesting and giving you a window into Will Riker mm-hmm. 8 years before. I think there's something else that gives us a window into that, because there's a scene between Tom and Will where they're having this disagreement about how to do things. And Will says, I just met with the captain about your mission recommendation. I would appreciate it if next time you came to me first. And Thomas says, I tried talking to you yesterday on the station. You wouldn't hear me out. I heard you, Lieutenant. I rejected your plan. May I ask what the captain decided? The captain has decided to go with your recommendation, but that's not the point, isn't it? If you think I'm coming down on you because the captain overruled me, think again. I happen to disagree with his decision, but he is my commanding officer and I follow his orders. Just so there's no confusion, I am your commanding officer and I expect you to do the same. If you can't, there's no place for you on my away team. So first of all, like, if this was a real thing, wouldn't that be weird? You are in command of the person who is like your duplicate. Maybe, I don't know, maybe that could happen with identical twins. But what I think is really interesting, like this time when I looked at that moment, I actually drew a parallel between Will Riker and Shelby in Best of Both Worlds.
Exactly.
Because Shelby is this person that is, you know, supposed to be following Riker's orders, but I don't have the exact quote here, but she's saying basically like, you know, I went to the captain because I thought it was a good idea and I thought you would reject it. And you know, Riker's, you know, given her
almost the same speech, you know, it's like, you run around me again, I'll whip you back so fast,
so
you
fast,
know?
Yeah.
Oh
yeah. But then of course, also in Best of Both Worlds, I think there's a later scene where he realized where I think it's before Picard gets assimilated. So Picard is telling Riker, like, I remember a first officer who was like that too. And it's like, yes, and you see that in Second Chances, that Tom Riker is that person that Will Riker was, just trying to kind of like go over the captain's head and do things their own way and not follow the chain of command because he's eager to do things. And I thought that was a really great character moment for, I don't know, maybe it's for both of them, because mm-hmm. It's just like illuminating like who this Thomas Riker person is, and it's also illuminating who Will Riker was before and kind of confirming that, yeah, he was really like Shelby was, and that maybe that's what annoyed him so much about it. But it also tells you how much Will Riker has changed. Now he's the kind of person, like, he is a first officer, he's had this additional experience, and he's like, we need to follow the chain of command. And I think even in Best of Both Worlds, when he's talking to Shelby, he's really annoyed about that. But, you know, he's still going to try to follow the chain of command. And in fact, in Best of Both Worlds, he elevates Shelby to be his first officer while Picard is with the Borg, and kind of learns to trust that. And I think in a similar way in Second Chances, the two of them kind of learn to work together a little bit better. I don't know. I just think it's really a nice parallel, and you get to just see more of who Will Riker was and how he's gotten to that place and some of the things he's still struggling with.
I love that. That you pointed that out, because I, yeah, instantly saw the same with the Shelby. But the fact that you say that Picard, you know, told Will, yeah, you were like that. And then here we are seeing how he is. Oh, I love that. That was great.
And it's himself, like, basically doing that to him.
Yeah, that is awesome. Ooh, that gave me chills.
But I love that when we do this, and that was a connection for whatever reason I'd never made before. Like, oh, it's the one that he was talking about before, and this confrontation with Shelby. So, yeah. What do you think, Richard?
Yeah, I could see that. I was just thinking about who benefits more out of it than out of the two, because I do believe probably the older Riker, well, William Riker, only because Thomas Riker obviously is stuck on that planet. There's no real character movement for him, except for he's been pining for Troy since then. So, but like, I was thinking, like,
trying to survive.
Well, yeah, that too. But I mean, besides that, besides the normal, survival, but like,
yeah, for the most part, he's pining for Troy. He's fixing stuff and he's bored is what it seems like. Cause there's no one else there. Right.
Right. Whereas Williams, off doing, missions and all that kind of stuff and whatnot, fight the Borg and everything. So I was just thinking, it's like, I that sounds so familiar, because like I've gone through that myself in my own career, where
you're stuck on a planet for eight years.
No. I mean, being the hotshot and going around, my seniors and everything. And I was like thinking the same thing. And it's like, and that happened recently to me not too long ago, that someone did that to me and I was really mad. But then again, I was more mad at myself at the fact that I didn't listen to her, and that I was like,
and then that was you before, right?
It was me before. Don't get me wrong. I was a hotshot when I first started my job. Mm. Believe you me. I mean, but like, it was just like, it just brings back memories. I mean, it's just, that the person who's the senior obviously gets more out of it, only because, especially if something like that, obviously you got to snap them back, and be like, hey, bring them into the fold of when you're the senior. But like I'm saying, like, it's a great lesson to be learned, that you need to start listening to what everyone has to say, regardless of if the idea is good or bad, and actually formulate the possibilities that it could be better than what you already have. So I absolutely love that that moment. So yeah, that's great. That's a great reflection. I'm glad you said that, because I've gone through it too recently. Very recently.
Amazing how we make these connections with our own lives.
I know, right?
Star Trek, illuminating our lives for 52 years.
That's why we love it.
So, Amy, you have any honorable mentions? I haven't heard a math moment yet.
Well, we do need our math character, and shows up in The Chase. And they are trying to figure out what these number blocks are. And lo and behold, the number blocks are mathematical representations of fragments of DNA. And it forms this geometric pattern, which I love how they show on the screen, that recognizes there's that missing link from that mathematical number set. So math is there everywhere. So it's not only just like sequence of numbers, but then it's also tying into geometry. So it's like a twofer. I love it.
They're doing such like innovative and new analysis, it makes you wonder if they should have like a math officer, because maybe sometimes like there's some like new math or a different interpretation of math that's needed, that may be beyond what like an engineer learned, but yeah. they don't seem to have
sign
one.
Me up, sign me up.
Yes. Professor Amy Nelson, our math officer. That's great. Yeah. You pick up these things and I don't even think about it. Something flashes by and I'm like, oh, cool. Geometric progression, whatever. Like geometric progression. That's great. Did you learn some new math there, Richard?
I'm sorry, what? That's great. I think I remember saying that. You know, I don't know. I don't look for those kind of stuff like Amy does. I mean, it's great. I mean, it really is. I mean, but sometimes when you hear all that technobabble, sometimes it's like, okay, you basically just said turn it on and off. Big words.
Well, this one says analyze it.
But you know what I mean. I'm just saying. That's how I see technical technobabble.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just my ears pick up on it.
Richard, any honorable mentions for you?
No. Everything has been picked. So, yeah.
I have one.
Okay. I have another one also, if it's not yours.
Oh, no. You go first with your second honorable mention.
Okay. So, it still comes from Second Chances, but it's a Worf one-liner. So, Data is asking Worf, you know, when they're down and Will and Thomas are having their beef with each other. And so, Data approaches Worf. And asks him, you know, it's like, why do you think it's so difficult? I see that humans are like to be unique. And he asks Worf, it's like, Worf, if you met yourself, would you be having this difficult of a problem? And Worf says, yes, I think I would. And Data's like, why? He's like, I can be difficult to get along with. And then Data's like, nods like in agreement. And I just love that. Worf's one-liners. There's too many. I can be difficult to get along with. Data nods in agreement.
Yeah. Yeah, Worf has the best one-liners. And you know what? I think they're just as good in DS9.
Okay, well, I'm getting there.
You're getting there. Listeners, Amy is doing a... I'd say rewatch. I think there may be some that you missed or had forgotten about, but a rewatch. And you're in season 3, right?
I am. Yeah.
Yeah. But Worf comes in season 4. Watch out for his one-liners. They're great.
All right. Okay. So what's your honorable mention?
Well, so my honorable mention, it's something I probably talked about in our Row episode way sometime last year, but it comes from Rascals, which I know is not everybody's favorite episode, but I think it's a really fun episode.
Yeah, it is.
Whether or not people could actually be taken back to being children. But I think it's a fun episode. But what I really like is how it ends. So it ends with this scene where Guinan is now an adult again, but Ro is still young. And Guinan sees Ro and she's, you know, doing a drawing. And I'll just kind of read out the scene because she's drawing when Guinan enters and Ro says, it's my mother. The funny thing is I never really drew a picture of her when I was young. It's just for some reason I wanted to now. And Guinan says, that's the wonderful thing about crayons. They can take you to more places than a starship. And Ro says, aww. It's my turn, isn't it? Guinan says, only if you're ready. And Ro said, it's not quite as bad as I remembered it. Being a child, I mean. Well, we'd better get going. And Guinan says, well, what's the hurry? I mean, the transporter will still be there. And there's kind of like a long shot and the episode ends. There's a couple of things that I love about it because you know that Ro has been through all of these traumatic experiences during the Cardassian occupation of Bajor and, you know, all this other stuff in her life. And like, this has been her chance to be a child. She was really resistant to it before Guinan says you should have fun with it. But like at the end of it, she gets this opportunity she never really had to actually like be a child. And Guinan, you know, in her wisdom is like, you know, it can wait. You need to just have this time. And what I would have loved that never happened, this kind of gets to your point on some of these things, Richard, is that, so you see, you know, Ro as this kid mostly in Rascals. And then the very next time you see her is her last appearance in Preemptive Strike, where basically, you know, she's being promoted, but then she jumps over to the Maquis and all of that. What I really would have loved to see was what happens in between there and what impact this experience that she had to actually experience something of a part of her life that she thought was lost, like her childhood that she could never get to again, and trying to understand a little bit more and kind of integrate more her experiences, what that would have been like. But we never got that follow-up. But I think it's really poignant that she's getting this chance to kind of do that and not worry about all of these adult responsibilities, and Guinan is going to be with her there for as long as she needs to. So I just love that scene, and it's one of my favorite things. And I think Guinan does, through some different episodes, you know, a lot of great, sorry, Amy,
don't, I'm going to call counseling.
No, okay. She's a great friend. She's a great friend who helps row through all of these things that she's going through. And of course, you guys and listeners know I guide her. Yeah. That I love Ro as a character, because she's really fascinating to me. But I love that scene. I think it's very poignant.
And that is, and you're right. It, you know, as a teacher, sometimes I see kids not have a childhood because of the choices that their parents make, and some extenuating circumstances, death and stuff like that, where these kids have to take on so much adult responsibility, and it breaks my heart. And what an opportunity for Ro to have that experience of having safety in, you know, while she's a child, with Guinan, who's, you know, protecting her, that she trusts. Just an amazing opportunity for Ro.
It's kind of sad, really. I mean, it's good. It's good. It's a great moment. At the same time, it's kind of sad to,
right,
you know, yeah, see that. It really is. I mean, you know, to add more on to your point, Amy, it's like, it's, you know, when I was younger, I used to say that I had a terrible childhood. Reality is that I had a freaking awesome childhood. And it's just like, it's in, you know, thinking about it, it's like, yeah, there are some people out there that don't even experience like half the stuff I went through when, as a kid, that is, you know, good stuff, yeah, as mm-hmm. it, and it's like, oh my gosh, it's like, and then hearing some of these people, so, I mean, obviously some of these people talk about their childhood, it's like, wow, it makes me think that they're stronger people than, you know, because like, you went through that as a child. I mean, like losing family and all that kind of stuff, and it's even worse if you're a child in war, or in a war zone or something like that, or your country is at war or whatever. I can only imagine how difficult that is, and it's, you know, and then to finally, you know, let your guard down as an adult, and then have that childhood, I guess, kind of, or at least a glimpse of what it could be. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure that's refreshing and unnerving at the same time, because you've been so on guard for so long, right, that you're just used to it, and you don't know what it's like to have fun and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, honestly, I agree with you on that one, Justin, that, you know, it would have been better to see that, like, maybe an episode of something like that, seeing her have fun or something like that. You know, learning from what she learned from Guinan. Mm-hmm. As a mother, I would say, yeah, guidance as a mother versus a counselor, because
it's like a mother figure to her.
Exactly, because she's. I mean, I'm assuming she's had tons of kids after 23 marriages.
Yeah,
right,
right. Yeah, so many kids.
Yeah,
but yeah, like even if it was something where, like, later on you see like Ro and some of the other crew just like having a good time in the holodeck or something, you know, something that you could learn from that experience, like life can be like a little better, and it's not all about like the weight of things that have happened before. So
yeah.
Well, let's go around with our final thoughts. Richard, your final thoughts.
I love this season. I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. I'm going to say it again and again. I love this season. Seven is great. Is a great, you know, wrap up and everything, but like, six is really when all the writers are really hitting on all cylinders, or at least I believe so. We're seeing that, you know, they've learned quite a bit, and that, you know, we're getting all these great stories. I mean, obviously we see Troy finally being way more assertive than what we've seen here in the previous past. We see more with Worf and everything, and we even get to see the more vulnerable side of Picard. So I absolutely love this season. It's great. far more character moments that we could possibly even cover. I mean, we might as well just say, hey, what's our favorite character moment of this episode?
So it'll be a 176 part series on every single episode.
So we could definitely do that if you want. No, but like, it's just, it's a great season overall. I certainly do recommend this season, and I absolutely love it. So I'm glad I'm happy with what we chose. Obviously there's far more than that. So
yeah. Excellent. Amy, your final thoughts.
Yeah. I have to agree completely with what Richard said. Like I feel like we chose such strong, and there's such strong picks, but we could have each had three different ones and they all still would have been strong. Like this season is so amazing, and it was difficult to choose. And I love that we chose like these awesome episodes, and that it led to a really good discussion. I think that's what great Star Trek does, is leads to really good discussions and how we relate it to our lives, and how strong this season is. 'Cause we could have all had different picks and we would have still had amazing connections and conversations from it, because this season is so, so great.
Yeah. Well, I love this series that we're doing about the favorite character moments, and it's wrapping up a little bit, but after season 7, we're going to go into the movies. So there'll be more, but yeah, I mean, season 6 is such a great season. I mean, in addition to like some of the things that we talked about, I was realizing that we've had a good number of episodes recently where we focused on things from season 6. Like Amy, when we talked with Clara about Schisms, which is a season 6 episode, I think talked a good amount about Frame of Mind. We had the Suspicions commentary. I mean, I think there's a lot of really great stuff in season 6 and certain things that, you know, I could have chosen from. Like, I mean, there's other episodes I really like. Realm of Fear, which is Barclay with the transporter, and, you know, True Q with Amanda as the Q. And I mean, like, there's just like all, and Ship in a Bottle, which is another great Moriarty episode. And there is just like lots of great stuff in this season. And I also noticed that like for a lot of the moments, it's not necessarily just between, you know, main characters. There's more than that. You know, there were moments where we talked about Guinan or Ro or Scotty or, you know, Nevek the Romulan, and there's Kayless. And I mean, there's a lot of like really interesting guests and things that are going on in this season as well. And I mean, I think there's a good mix between like the really like heavy stuff and some lighter stuff that we identified. There's just such great stuff all across the board. And we really could just, if we wanted to, go through every episode and say, what's your top three and two honorable mentions in this episode? But, you know, that would take a while.
Yeah.
But, listeners, let us know your favorite character moments from season 6. I'm sure there's lots that we didn't get to. We didn't even, one of the ones I thought about was Timescape, which I love so much,
yeah.
Which is the one where they kind of go to this what is, it's like a battle between a Romulan ship and the Enterprise D, and they're frozen in time and all this stuff. So much great stuff. So yeah, I love when we get to talk about these things. So preview of next week's episode, the three of us will be talking about Star Trek Las Vegas, which by the time this episode drops will be coming up in about a month. We've all been there previously, and Amy and I are going again this year. So we'll be sharing stories of our experience, and also if you're going to Star Trek Las Vegas, some tips just to help you out there. We think you'll enjoy it whether or not you're going. So we look forward to that next week. Well, it's been so much fun talking about our favorite season 6 character moments, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, to the journey!
Yeah, I don't see him being allowed to just mooch off of Voyager, which is what he'd be doing if he resigned his commission. Be like, okay, get out. We'll find the next planet and drop
you. So it's kind
off.
Of an empty threat. I'm going to resign my commission. Like, fine, you want to go scrub the plasma manifolds? Knock yourself out. Someone has to do it. Might as well be you.
Warp 5.
DeLorean?
I'm terrible with names, let me just tell you.
Hey, just like Back to the Future, man. DeLorean.
Well, you've now you ruined son- it.
Yep, you see his son, the DeLorean. Doors open this way. No, so, but in
well,
that episode, we
ears.
See his son. He does.
Maybe he could fly. I don't know.
Now that should be the stinger.
Earl Grey.
Was that Jellicoe that went by?
What are you talking about?
Will you stop finding things in this episode that no one else sees?
The guy had gray hair and everything. I thought it was Jericho.
Oh, yeah,
because
every guy
my
with
bad.
Gray hair is Jericho.
Yeah, yeah. Like he's just visiting after coming by for Chain of Command.
He was stopping for a cup of tea.
He doesn't strike me as someone that drinks tea.
Melodic Treks.
Oh, okay. So how do we do this? I mean, wait a minute. Before we get into that, like, what about, like, the Tarantino Trek movie? Is that going to happen? Because I'm totally stoked for that.
Oh, yeah. Listen, he's done two movies already.
Whoa.
And Captain Picard. Wow. Because Next Generation
Tarantino movie. That'll be great. Well, I'm so very excited that we're going to be getting two Tarantino movies. That's just awesomeness. This is great. I love knowing about the future. You know what? We'll set up that interview with Jeff Russo. Let's get the next episode of Melodic Treks back online, and let's make it happen.
We're making it happen, Brandon. Oh, but here's the best part. I have a copy of the interview right here, already mixed and ready to go, and you can put it online when I leave.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us, and we might read your email on the show. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Justin, where can people contact you when you're not meeting Guinan for the first time 500 years before you met her for the first time?
Yes, something like that. Have I met Guinan? Did it happen in the past? Is it happening in the future? This time travel stuff. Well, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek, tweeting out my season 5 rewatch of The Next Generation. And you can also find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. So, Richard, where can people contact you when you're not trying to deal with having a transporter double of yourself?
Oh my gosh. Could you imagine if there was two of me?
Oh no, I cannot.
Do you have a middle name by which we could call that transporter duplicate?
Actually, I don't.
Oh. That's okay. We'll call him Wesley.
There you go.
No. I'll kill him in the transport. Well, they can find me. You guys can find me on the Babel Conference. I pop in here and there. And as you can tell, I love talking trash about Wesley. but I'm also on Twitter. My handle is XRansom. So, Amy, where can people contact you when you're not cosplaying as a Romulan Troy?
Oh, man. I need to be doing that 24/7. That was awesome.
We got to watch out, though, because you may just threaten to throw us out in airlock.
Exactly. So don't mess. You can find me here on the network. I host The Edge, which is our podcast for Star Trek Discovery, and I do that with Patrick Devlin. I am on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, and I am tweeting about my Deep Space Nine watch, and I am in season 3 and loving it, really, really enjoying it, and it's so fun to have the interaction with the listeners. It's been really fun. And
Yay!
But I don't know. Can I say it's my favorite place? I'm really getting into this Twitter thing. But I also am on the Babel Conference and enjoy the discussions there. So you can look for me there.
If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/TrekFM. That's patreon.com/TrekFM to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, The Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producers, Norman Lau, Justin Ozer, Michael Huter, and Thomas Appel. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and Earl Grey.
So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Now you are going to listen to me.
Today is a good day to die!
The pleasure is mine, Hutch.